Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Lyndon from Bristol, and you're listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, if Noah held a death match on the Ark, which animal would win? Okay, here comes the show, and remember, question everything.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dane Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer,
hello,
and a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we're talking everything from
Lyndon from Bristol's question: if Noah held a death match on the Ark, which animal would win? Lyndon, that's dark, mate. But Dane, what do you reckon?
It's dark, but Lyndon recognises that we do live in a circle of life, which is actually really subversively a circle of death. I would say, in my experience, and given the fact that sharks and leviathans like blue whales would have not been on the Ark, neither would orcas, known as killer whales, when they really should be called sea pandas, I think that the men on the Ark, as Noah's sons, Ham, Shem and Japheth, you're one of those guys. One of those guys.
You don't get many people called Ham anymore, do you? But
you don't really. It's like it's more of a suffix now, isn't it? Like Graham or Lee Ham. I don't know if that works Lee exactly Ham, the same way, but Lee Ham and Graham, yeah. So, I would say,
but the Bible, isn't it? It's the Bible, isn't it? You know, they're men always ruins everything in the Bible.
Pretty much, yeah. Deadliest of all the species, if you ask me. So that's what I think, Lyndon. I think man would win.
But suffice to say, in this podcast, we ask and answer all the questions. Isn't that right, Dane?
Absolutely. No question is too stupid. No question is too small. And if you do like the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify and you'll never miss an episode, or subscribe to us on Acast, the world's biggest podcast network. With that being said, on today's show is a seminal British stand-up comedian. He received a record-breaking 5 nominations for the Best Show Award at the Edinburgh Festival, winning the Melbourne Comedy Festival Outstanding Show Award in 2019. His much-heralded Netflix show Repertoire features 4 hours of stand-up specials and is an entire anthology, and he has also written 2 best-selling books, Perfect Sound Whatever and Classic Scrapes. He also co-hosts the Dave Show Hypothetical and the hit podcast Off Menu. Please welcome to the show the inimitable and incredible James Acaster.
Thank you so much, Dane. Ah, oh, that warmed my heart. So many memories in that intro.
Our first question, just to whet your inquisitive mind: how are you, James? How have you been?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I've probably, you know, it's been an up and down year. Some of the parts of lockdown and self-isolation and that weird moment when we were in between lockdowns and no one knew what the rules were. Some of those moments, some of those elements, aspects of that have been good, and I've been like, oh, actually, maybe I'm going to keep on doing this for the rest of my life. And some of the aspects have been bad and I've missed the normal world. I think that's pretty normal, right? That's most people probably felt like that.
James, what things have you missed then? Because it is weird that we're now at the end of 2020 and we're still in this situation, aren't we? So
I think I've just missed the world itself just being normal. Like, I haven't missed that much about my life. I mean, maybe I've missed I definitely missed going out for meals and eating in restaurants, and I've missed our job as comedians, we get to travel the world a little bit. I've definitely missed that as well. So and I haven't seen my family as much, and given my mum and dad listen to pretty much every podcast that I'm on, I should probably say that I've missed seeing my family as much as I normally do.
Shout out the Acaster matriarch and patriarch, and also it was special honourable mention to your dad as well, who was very complimentary about my work.
I remember walking around Edinburgh and him and I was walking through the Edinburgh Festival with my parents, and suddenly I was like, where's my dad? He was with us a second ago. I don't know where he's gone. And I looked up the hill and he was chatting to Dane and telling Dane how much he loves his comedy.
And I was ecstatic. And as I said at the time, Mr. Acaster Senior, you never touch your pocket if you want to come and see my show.
Yes.
It's a pleasure and always a gesture of goodwill. There's a lot of elements of lockdown. There's certain elements of stillness and solace that I've enjoyed. But yeah, at the same time, I think it's been a real reminder of our humanity, because I see COVID as almost nature kind of like, you know, grandstanding on capitalism. And it's kind of been like, I've begun to appreciate, yeah, those more human aspects of, like, it's nice to have fine dining, but I realized that it's really having people to go to dinner with is a lot more important than fine dining. In a sense.
I also realized there's little things I miss, like just coming home to my wife. Like, I never come home to her anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it used to be kind of, hey, I haven't seen you for a little while. Yeah. Like, you know, every day. I can come home to you in like coming out of this different room. But other than that, it's just.
Exactly. It's the novelty of it, of encounters, or the novelty of new encounters, you know, should be for a social species that is thrilling. When you know, I mean, most rappers used to articulate that by saying like, nothing is better than new pussy. But what I'm saying is that like, there are human beings and complicated minds and nerves attached to said pussies. And I'm appreciating that a lot more now.
Jane, that's so romantic.
Yeah. It's really hard when you live by yourself to like hone your interpersonal skills. So I'm like, what I'm trying to say is, ladies, is that I appreciate no pussy, but I appreciate pussy in general. Yeah.
Good. Well, it's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane, on that bombshell?
Absolutely. James, as I say, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast as an admired peer and a guest. So we invite you as our esteemed guest to ask our first question, which we could discuss for 15 minutes for some change. And then Howard will ask a question posed to both of us, which you can also discuss. And then lather, rinse, repeat. I'll ask a question and then we can let our fans know where and listeners know where they can find you. And for those who may not have heard you before, to enjoy the novelty of Encounter, you can plug all of your current projects and future projects. Sound like a plan? Good. Well then, sir, I invite you to ask our first question.
Well, I mean, I feel like that first one with the Noah's Ark one is such a great question that I feel ashamed about the one I'm bringing to the table.
But Lyndon, well done. Thank you, Lyndon.
Yeah, well done, Lyndon. Excellent question. So this is something I've always thought about my life. Maybe I just watched too many films and TV shows. And so, you know, there are certain devices that get used so often in films and that make me wish they were real. And one is the body swap films, like stuff like Freaky Friday and stuff like that. And I've always wondered, like, yeah, I've always wanted to do a body swap and to suddenly find myself in someone else's body. I would like to ask you guys if you could body swap with anyone who's currently alive, any current living person, who would it be and why? And what would you do?
It's a great question.
That's a very good question.
It's a lovely
question. That's a really good question.
I mean, interesting to think about how many body swap films. Would you consider Face Off a body swap? It's probably not. Face Off doesn't count as a body swap. It's just a face swap, obviously. No.
This is a real negative, real negative commentary on how far the cosmetic industry will go if left unregulated.
We're sticking to the harsh rules of the body swap film, which is that I am obviously still me, I'm just in someone else's
body. They vary, you know, Howard, with body swap films, because body swap films, the duration of the swap is either based on if you learn whatever spiritual lesson you need to learn or the semantics that you need to learn in the film, you can switch back, or does it take the same kind of natural disaster of lightning striking back in the same place to switch you? Or I guess the other one is if you're able to appease said witch who you initially offended. So those all things. And then the only sub question I have to it is there a time limit for how long the body swap takes place, James?
Very good question.
I've got like a day or a week. Yeah.
I would say that there's not a time limit, but you can basically, let's say there's one of those machines where you sit down and the thing goes on your head and then there's light and then you swap. So both of you know where that machine is and you can go and use it, which might inform your decision, because you might be like, well, you know, I want someone I can trust who I know is going to hold up their end of the bargain and go to the machine with me when I'm ready to switch back.
I get you.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, for me, my instant reaction, Dane, if you don't mind me kind of going first, is just that there's the simple fact that I never You probably know about me, this about me, James. I never played professional sport. No one will be surprised about that. I often think it would be one of the most interesting lives to lead, but probably not for my whole life, actually. Sometimes I look at sportsmen and I think they're a bit miserable, really, aren't they? Like, they've had to kind of dedicate every minute of their lives to being able to create this image of and this career, and then that career is over and you spend a load of time talking about other people doing it. So I would definitely think about body swapping into a sportsman. That's my natural reaction. Picking the sportsman, that's tough, right? That's a tough gig, because you've got some great people to choose from in there. I would obviously, as a football fan, think about, you know, your Cristiano Ronaldo's of this world. He's getting a bit old, so maybe, you know, it's a bit late in the day.
Maybe he'd spend a day in his shoes to find out how that feels for someone to be like, he's getting old now, even though you have all these accolades, but people are like, yeah, but he's almost 37 now. So, I don't know how that feels.
Yeah. So you'd be tempted to go for someone who's at the top of their game, you know. Mo Salah seems like a lovely man. I mean, I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I bet he has a nice life, and I bet it's quite.
You could put in a transfer request.
Yeah, exactly. I could change the course of football history.
They could be like, we've got one more game until we win. Even if we lose, we win. And you'd be like, I don't care. I want to go to the Emirates Stadium.
I think I'd probably have to pick an Arsenal player if I was doing football. So and they're not doing very well at the moment. So I would probably regret that instantly, having, you know, but to play for my team would be fun. But I'd probably end up picking LeBron James. James Acaster, because LeBron James, I think, is the most remarkable man in our world at the moment. You know, he does everything he wants, and he still wins basketball every week. So, and also, I am not very similar to LeBron James. So,
in what ways?
I'd love to know myself, James. So I'm ready to see where he goes with this.
Other than having two legs and two arms, I don't think I've got any other similarities between me and LeBron James, really. And you know, a love of basketball, that would be on the list. But there's not really many. You know, I think that'd be an incredible experience to be LeBron James for a week. And then obviously he would not enjoy being me for a week, I assume. Or maybe he'd enjoy the rest, but. Tough.
What you got to think about is that, like, would he be happy being you? But also, if you suddenly were in LeBron James's body, that doesn't mean you're now good at basketball, right?
Oh, shit.
Oh,
because basketball is not just about, you know, athleticism. It's about it's a very tactical game, basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. And I haven't got a lot of experience, as I mentioned, of being a professional sportsman. So tricky.
Did you watch The Last Dance?
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoyed that.
Amazing. And you just really, you watch that and go, it's all about us up here as well. It's how much you want it, how competitive you are, you know.
Yeah. Oh, God, that is tricky, isn't it? So now I'm thinking sport. Okay, Dane, where have you got up to with this? I'm gonna have a rethink, because this is now getting more challenging.
Well, on the subject of sport, James Acaster has introduced a curveball into this question, because I thought it was a given that your kinesthetics would still remain the same if you switched. But you're right, it takes more than just, you know, you just being a pilot in piloting the plane doesn't mean, you know, you can necessarily fly as good as the next pilot. So with that being said, and if I go to an athlete, the thing is, I have an idea of somebody, but I'm not sure if I know who their name. But essentially, I want to be like the second largest majority shareholder at like Google. So I'm not like the main guy, but I just come and sit down and stuff and I give like, you know, dubious decisions. Like, I second the motion of monitoring people's heart rates via their phones. And then I return back to the shadows. And I say that because I feel like if I body swap with that guy, most of my peers won't necessarily notice. They'll just be like, oh, what's that? Like, we'll be in like the bathroom. They'll be like, you are unseasonably less evil today. What's happening? And I'll be like, I don't know. I think I feel sick. And then what I'll do is then begin my plan of redistributing the wealth of Google to the less fortunate. And then also then probably like me, like, I want to access the mainframe, which probably exists. And they're like, but that has Bernie Sanders nudes on there, among other things. You know that. Boris Johnson sex tapes there. We're not supposed to show it. I'm like, do you know who the fuck I am? which I know sounds very autocratic, but sometimes, James, as Jeff Moneyson from Google says,
As I always say,
sometimes you have to stroke the devil to save the righteous. So
that is what you always say.
Yeah. That's
so what I always say. If you're doing that and Jeff Moneyson is in your body and he's now a stand-up comedian, is all of his comedy going to be observational about the world, which would basically be the new world that you're creating as him? As far as the public are concerned, all of Dane Baptiste's new material is kind of really heavily focused on the new world being created by Google. And for some reason, Dane Baptiste is really angry about it and really anti things are going.
That could be. And everyone's like, you know, Dane Baptiste's comedy has taken a very weird turn.
Here's the thing. Here's my issue with all this is that I think you are doing a lot of good in Jeff Moneyson's body. I think you're weirdly protecting Jeff Moneyson quite a lot through this whole thing. I don't think Jeff Moneyson is protecting you while he's in your body, and I think he's going to get Dane Baptiste cancelled because he's going to be going on stage saying a bunch of stuff that's like anti, you know, solving climate change, anti this, that. He's going to be really right-wing, really problematic, and when you get back in your own body, you might not have a career anymore.
Oh, that's true. Do you have someone, James?
James, you must want to body swap someone, surely.
Probably just my girlfriend.
Very good.
You know, we can just body swap together, and you know, we'll still be living pretty much the same lives. We know how to pass ourselves off as each other, but you know.
What a weird film that is. That makes Big look not as weird, right? Because Big is a body swap type of film, right? It's not a body swap classic, but as in, like, that's not the traditional body, but it has a body swap element, right?
Kind of. His own body grows up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's more of the accelerated aging 13 to 30 paradigm as opposed to, like, the body swap. Because the thing about Big is that I think I've seen, there's another film called Little, which does it in reverse, where a woman goes from being 30 to like being 13, which worked for a young woman. I think the idea of a man being like, well, if I could be 13 again and go back to school, like that's a premise I'm not that comfortable with anymore. Now I'm an adult. The idea of a guy being like, what would happen if a guy woke up? This is Jeff Moneyson, 60 years old, successful CEO. What was high school like for Jeff? And then Jeff wakes up and he's like, oh my God, I'm back in junior high. I'm like, I feel like your inclinations, having the inclinations of like a 16-year-old, but being in a 14-year-old body, it doesn't sit well with me.
I mean, Big, that's the big, you know, the massive problem with it. And everyone, even when I was a kid and watched it, at the end I thought, hold on, she's just slept with a child.
Yeah.
And that's just the problem with it, isn't it? Is that I can't believe so many people making that film and no one...
If you watch the, no one ever watches to the end of the credits, but the end of the credits, she does go to prison. Sad, actually, that her whole life has been ruined.
Is it sad, though? Justice is served. Or was it entrapment? Who knows? That's the real, those are the real moral questions that are posed at the end of every big screening. Might as well have been done by the Coen brothers. I mean, that's, you know.
Or an Aronofsky film.
That's the big that we all experienced.
Well, that's a good trio of options, though. James's girlfriend, LeBron James, and...
Jeff Moneyson, senior shareholder at Google Incorporated.
Yeah. Well, we won't probably see any of those films actually happen, sadly. But unless James finds a way in his lockdown life to... exchange bodies with his girlfriend. Would your girlfriend be all right with that, James, do you think? Or
I think she'd be up for that for like a short amount of time, you know, like she'd trust me that I'd swap back whenever she wanted to. And, you know, we're just kicking around the flat together at the minute anyway. It'd be nice for this the day that, you know, she does some podcasts and I do her job for, she works from home. So, you know, we'll just do that for a bit. And then we can kiss each other and see what it's like to be the other person.
I think that's a really good idea. I think that's such a good idea, James. I really think if relationship counsellors or therapists had that technology, they would absolutely use that. They would absolutely. I think that would be the ultimate form of intimacy because then you could be like, and then you swap back and you're like, no, you're right. I don't spend long enough. And then, you know, it's something stuff like that. I think it's really good. Would you like get a tattoo of your own name on your girlfriend's body and be like, she's like, why does it say James under my left boob? And you'd be like,
pfft. Yeah, like, look, I'm not going to rule that out, Dame. I can't say that I wouldn't do it, in all honesty.
Well, it was a very good question. And obviously, listeners, if you have a body swap you'd like to suggest or let us know you've done in your spare time during lockdown, we'd love to hear about it. Probably newsworthy, really, if it is. But,
absolutely.
But thank you, James, for bringing an excellent hypothetical question. Pleasure. Which I know you like a hypothetical, obviously.
I do, love them.
And my question in today's episode is gonna diverge a little bit into comedy geekery, if that's okay with you both. Obviously, masters of your craft, the pair of you. And I was thinking about an interesting thing that, kind of comes up now and again with the punters out there, you know, the normal people outside of the industry who often find it surprising that, you know, people write all of their stuff. Kind of, obviously you can improvise. Everyone does a bit of it. And so kind of my question was quite a simple thing, which is kind of, you know, how much of comedy for you guys is natural as opposed to being nurtured? So how much of it kind of comes out as organically as people kind of fantasize that comedy is natural, and how much of it is sat and churned out in front of a notepad or a laptop? And I suppose, James, I'm fascinated to see where you stand on this.
You go first, James. I like that. And that's a good question, Harry.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'd say, so I've gone through different stages over the years, but I don't write anything down anymore. So for my last, I think, 4 shows, I've not written anything down. And I'll just I'll book loads of work in progress shows in and then improvise during those and then remember the bits that work and then hone them over time. And so, like, you know, I might make notes in my phone after a gig and be like, that word was funnier than that other word you used the other night or whatever. But I think at the end of it, I have a show that is completely scripted, so that if I went into a situation where the audience were really low energy and almost deadly silent for the whole show, I could still do an hour or 2 hours of comedy. I could still go on and do the show, and I've got it written and I can navigate that. But in front of an audience who are a bit more up for it and are fun, I can still improvise around that show and mess around with it. And it would probably balance out on a good night that, you know, 25% of it is loose and whatever. And then the rest is all written down. But then even then, your delivery and the way you're performing it changes from night to night all the time. You know, more now than I used to. I think I used to have shows. I remember my tech in Edinburgh once saying that he could literally predict, like, for certain jokes, what way I was going to turn my body. And you know, because I'd do it the same every night, because I was very mechanical in, like, this is how each joke has to work, and it's all like a machine and all the cogs. And
that's interesting.
And that does your head in after a while. And I've more now of, like, you know, let's just see what the energy is like in the room tonight and try and go with that. And sometimes I mess that up.
Part of the reason I asked that question is just because, to me, you know, and I'd say this to about both of you guys, is that you do feel like very natural comedians, to me, certainly, but to the audiences. I think, you know, it's kind of, and it's not to kind of in any way dismiss people who feel very, very staged, kind of classic, like, just kind of like set up punchline stuff, which you guys obviously do set up some punchlines. It just feels very natural and organic and almost baked into your character, James. You know, your character is kind of a huge element of what you're doing up there, right? And it doesn't ever feel that you're not being James, I think, to a lot of people.
Sometimes I can stray away from that and I mess up. You know, you have good and bad gigs. And sometimes I definitely, you know, I'm tired, I'm not feeling funny, there's hecklers in, whatever it is. And I start, like, I forget to, you know, root it in that persona and that character. And then it can go wrong a little bit. But I think definitely finding that balance of, you know, I've got a plan but I don't have to follow it robotically. And that's why I don't write things down, or, you know, I try not to decide like, here's how I deliver each thing and whatever, but I have got this show. So like, you know, it's fun in that mixture so that your personality can come through and can steer it a bit more. And people can feel like you're in the room and you're not just, you know, someone with the fourth wall up doing a monologue.
That's the key phrase. Again, that's the key phrase, right, isn't it, Dane? Is it being in the room is just what I think when it works. Yeah. God.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it means you have to have, as James said, you have to leave a some breath or like a reciprocal energy for it to work that way. Because if you are trying to emulate some form of conversation, it's as James said, is that you kind of. I try to write stuff a lot less down. Ideas and concepts I write down, but in terms of putting shows together, before I'd have like maybe a bullet point or an idea of how a set would go. But as you said, it's more about reading energy and stuff. And I might begin with a particular narrative, and depending on how audience members respond to that, or they respond to that particular energy. And as they're doing so, I've been able to live edit based on maybe the aesthetic of that audience, and just like I said, how responsive they are to a particular thread. Then I begin to start making the set more relevant to that, and not necessarily pandering, but it's, you have material and stuff and you have narratives where it's like I begin to kind of tack on. So I have some friends, and within context and stuff, they know what elements of my speech they are kind of key into. If I'm being particularly highbrow with something, that they may key into it into a very different way because they have a context of who I am, which is very different to an audience. But at the same time, an audience, for them, the payoff is more about the fact that I'm been able to be highbrow or subvert a particular topic, whereas you might not have that same obligation when you're speaking to your friends. So I think they're not mutually exclusive, but at the same time, I guess it's different strokes for different situations and stuff. So
I was interested by the fact as well that, you know, you kind of look at how people come up with stuff. Has it been limiting, James, for you not being out in the world? And then little things happening that allow you to find a way into a bit of comedy from that. Not to say that your girlfriend and your body swap life together isn't providing you with lots of great, you know, kind of material. Sure. But there's less going on, right?
Yeah, I haven't really. I mean, this year was meant to be a year off for me anyway of stand up. So, like, I haven't been writing stand up or thinking about that at all, really. Every now and again, there have been some things that naturally pop into your head that you go, oh, that could be a routine. You know, if I was writing a show, maybe that would be something. And a lot of the time, if I was to write a show now, I think it would be about this situation, and you just try and write about how your life is and hope that some people will relate to it, and those people who don't relate to your experience of lockdown at least see humor in the stuff that you're talking about. I think, you know, right now, if I was to watch a comedian, I'd want to see someone talk about a lot of the big news stories from this year. I'd actually like to see, you know, a routine about the whole Dominic Cummings thing, or about the argument about whether statues of slave traders and stuff should be torn down and all that stuff. I'd rather those news stories that I got invested in or watched, I'd like to see someone do stand up about this year and all the big talking points of this year. Other people wouldn't. Other people, you know, we filmed a series of Hypothetical recently with a much smaller audience. Dane was a fantastic guest on the series. And
thank you for having me. It's very, very fun.
It's brilliant. And we were told we couldn't talk about COVID. We're told, you know, that was, we couldn't acknowledge why we were also spaced apart, and we couldn't go near each other, and we couldn't touch something that another panelist had touched and all this kind of stuff. And we would tell the audience beforehand that we weren't allowed to talk about COVID, and sometimes some of them would cheer because they didn't want to hear about it. and I was like, okay, yeah, fair enough. But like, for me personally, if I was watching a comic, I want to hear a comedic kind of take on what's going on at the minute. I want to hear, you know, people's viewpoints on all this, because it's absolutely batshit and I've never lived through anything like it before. So I would hope, I'd hope that, you know, it wouldn't be too difficult to write material at the minute, because, you know, this is it. Not only is it such a surreal experience for us as individuals, but it's shared to some degree. You know,
it's one of the only shared experiences we've had for a very, very long time. at least from the perspective of a lockdown, that's something that some people have heard about, even if they've not directly experienced it themselves. And I think especially for those people who refer to themselves as observational comedians, you'd be massively, massively remiss to not chronicle like the experiences that, you know, the entire planet has had over the last 10 months. It'd be really weird. But then at the same time, it's like, you know, as a comedian, I guess part of your understanding of the political aspects of our job is people do come to performing artists for an element of escapism. So I think sometimes the fact that you are speaking about around the topic and everything is your acknowledgement of that topic to a large extent, is that like, I'm so aware of how it affects people. That's why I'm avoiding discussing it. So, you know, sometimes in some ways it's like you're still doing the same observation, but it's more of a, I'm observing that, you know, this as a topic kind of elicits kind of a neurosis in people, makes them quite anxious. So I probably will veer away from it. But it's depending, you know, people describe it as tragedy plus timing. So maybe people need a bit more time, I suppose.
Yeah, it's amazing to hear you guys talk about it. Because, I mean, for me, as a comedy fan who's watched you guys live many times and loved, it's going to be so fascinating to see everyone back out there, hopefully in the kind of, said to, you know, after spring when things start to get back to some kind of normality, to kind of go and see people, and it'll feel real in a whole new way because we've just been apart, right, in such a peculiar sense for so long. It's going to be fascinating to kind of connect again, because that's where comedy's the best, right, is when you're connecting with an audience and they're connecting with you, which is it feels like a distant memory, right?
We'll see. We're still going through it right now. We'll see. Remaining pensive in terms of how the social fabric of society will be restitched.
Yeah, I don't know really. It's weird because, like, you know, like I said, I had last year was the busiest I'd been with live stuff, and before that, you know, I just had 12 years of just constantly doing stand-up gigs since the moment I was an open spot, and trying to gig all the time. And last year I was like, I need to have a year off. I need to have a year where I don't do any gigs whatsoever. So this was always going to be the plan. And I haven't missed it. I haven't missed doing stand-up. And I don't know when it will start up again, but I also don't know when I'm
right
going to want to start up again. So it's a weird one at the minute where I'm not thinking like,
wow,
I want to get on stage and I've got these things that I want to talk about. I'm kind of just feeling like, oh, well that'll, you know, I'll do online fundraisers for live comedy, and I'll do stuff like that to help out. But I myself am not like, I hope they start up soon so I can do a gig. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, you couldn't have timed it any better, could you? Bloody hell. That is mental that was how it worked out for you. But yeah.
Yeah, very weird.
Very weird. But thank you to both of you for answering that question. It's kind of quite a comedy geeky one, because I do find people's general impression of what comedy is isn't always the reality. And so it's quite interesting to kind of dive in on that. Mm-hmm. But over to you, Dane, for today's final question in this episode.
Thank you very much. It's been some great questions so far. Definitely agree with your sentiment, James, and that I think it's important to take a break, and the stillness and the break from comedy has been immensely beneficial. That being said, I hope I'm not being too presumptive in saying, based on your approach to comedy, you definitely love the art form.
Yes.
Obviously it would not be a too long a departure from it with the break you're taking. But what I wanted to ask is, because I feel like even like myself, I'm sure that you do have the time to kind of reflect on the fact that we're able to do something we enjoy for a living.
Mm.
But by the same token, they say you should change your job every 10 years. I say that to say this, that amongst many discussions and conspiracy theories, one of the ones people have said have been the introduction of a living wage in the West, where your lifestyle is kind of supplemented. And I'm just giving you that context because I'm saying, let's say, not for any negative reason, but like, you know, you've reached this apex of this phase of your comedy / artistic career.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we're taking a break. It's like a hiatus. So let's say money's not an object. Your prosperity is not depending upon how much money you make. Other than comedy, what would be your ideal job post lockdown?
Mm.
And And again, like this is the, like, even if the, to give context, even if it was like, I want to be like, so caterpillars have hair and I want to be a hairdresser for caterpillars. That is completely valid. So there's no stupid job here at all.
Okay.
So yeah. So it's like, what would be your vocation?
Oh, it's very difficult. There's jobs that I've had in the past that,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I've actually enjoyed... Well, the job I had before I did stand-up, this is going to sound very altruistic, but it's not. But like, before I did stand-up, the last job I had was I worked in a school as a classroom assistant with autistic children. And I did that job just because I'd just moved to London to do stand-up comedy, but I wasn't making enough money from stand-up, so I needed a day job, and I needed a job that meant I had my evenings free to do gigs. And it was one of the few jobs I was qualified for. So I didn't have any qualifications, but I'd taught kids the drums in the past, and I'd done respite work with one boy who had Down syndrome. And so like, I kind of had some experience in teaching kids and working with people with disabilities. So like, I was able to get that job, and that's the only reason I did it. And then I was surprised with like how much I enjoyed working there, how much I enjoyed kind of like, there's a lot of problem solving. Maybe that's like quite similar to when you're a stand-up and you're trying to do problem solving with your routines, and why doesn't this routine work, and how do I get this to work? And then, you know, how do I manage to do a gig in this room above a pub, but then also do well at this tent at a festival? And then how do I do well at the Edinburgh Fringe, but then also do well at a new material night in London, or a gig out in the West Country that is like part of some sort of weekend a church has put on or whatever. And then working at the school, I had to figure out how to work with every single kid, and every single kid was different, and there was different techniques of working with each one of them, and ways to get, you know, make sure their day-to-day experience was as calm and productive as possible for them. And I kind of really enjoyed that. I mean, on my first day there, just standing at lunchtime, they put me, you all get put, all the teachers and classroom assistants get put in different places for lunch, at different lunchtime clubs. I got put in the activity hall where the kids were just like, they were all legging it around the activity hall, and there was different things they could play with, but some kids were fighting over the stuff, and I didn't know how to control any of them. It was day one. I didn't know any of the kids' names, and I was just standing there thinking, I don't know what to do and I'm useless here. And then 9 months later, when I was about to leave and, you know, I was able to quit that job and become a full-time stand-up, I remember being on that same duty for the last week in the activity hall, and I knew all the kids, and I knew, you know, what some of their triggers were, what, how to calm down some of them, you know, what, you know, the kids who might, you know, who might try and poke me in the eye, and the kids who would do nothing to me, and like, so how to like, could, and some kids I could just look at and they knew that I knew what they were up to, and then they wouldn't do it because like they, you know, they, by that point I had a certain relationship with them, when they were like, he knows I'm not allowed near that particular toy because I can't, I don't behave myself, and he's just looked at me, so I won't go near it. Whereas on my first day, they would just walk right up to it and maintain eye contact with me and then throw the toy at me. So like, And I really, I just enjoyed and felt like, you know, I hadn't had a job before that where I felt myself improving throughout the whole time there. And I felt like I understood people more by the end. I think I've completely unlearned all of it now. But like, but at that point, I'm being more empathetic towards just people in general because of like, you can't work with kids like that without being an empathetic person. You have to think, well, why are they feeling like that today? And how do I help them? And I really, really did enjoy it and was sad when I had to leave, even though the plan was to go to London and become a professional stand-up. And I felt so lucky to be able to quit my job and do that. And that's thanks to Josie Long, who gave me support on her tour. But like, but I was, you know, I was surprised at how I was a bit gutted to not, not be working there anymore. And yeah, I think in terms of like, there are jobs that I've never done, which I might be like, oh, I'd like to see what that was like. But it's always been a bit of a kind of like, oh, in a, something you have moments in life where you go, in an, if I had more than one life and I could live this whole life again, you know,
yeah.
I never trust the people who say, I wouldn't change a thing. I'm like, bullshit, you've already had this. You've already done this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do it differently. And I think, exactly. I maybe want to see how what road my life would go down if I'd stayed there.
Absolutely. And that should also be the premise of the question as well, is that if you could do it again without, and this, because I like to think, you know, there's people like, I like to think, obviously people adhere to Abrahamic religion, is this idea that people that pass on to the other side either look down on us or kind of have a continuing interest with the way other people's lives continue. But I think I doubt that very much. I feel like if human beings were already happy to indulge Blu-ray DVDs with like alternate endings, I think if you had a place in another life where you could look at alternate Earths or alternate realities based on crucial decisions you've made and how that unfolds, I think I'd spend hundreds of years doing that on the other side before I cared about the first ever people on this planet are doing. Like, I think it's a real part of our vanity where we're like, I know grandma's still watching me. Don't you think your grandma has better things to fucking do?
Yeah, she's like, got loads of channels to like, look
at. Yeah, like maybe your grandma wants to find out what kind of life she would have had if she wasn't so marred down by a patriarchal idea of coupling in the form of marriage. Oh. Maybe she wants to know what happened if she pursued that thing with that hunk that she met during the Blitz.
I think about this kind of thing all the time, especially now, because as listeners and Dane, and I mentioned to James, I made a human person this year, and you kind of look at him and kind of go, God, there's so many possibilities, right? It's just every possibility under the sun.
First of all, you co-collaborated on a human.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, good point. Good point. It wasn't all my own work.
Don't get us cancelled, Howard.
Good point. Tara will be furious.
Out of the two of you as well, you did the least.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, that is fair. That is
if
fair.
If anything, you kind of exec produced. I mean, you might have turned up to the studio, but...
The investment. I put investment in, you know.
Yeah, you're a feature. You know, you put some money.
Yeah, I was going to make a seed investment joke, but it's not worth it. But the... the thing about the boy that comes into my head, which is, you know, babies, that you kind of spot that they like certain things more than others. So my guy Dylan, he loves music, right? Like, he's well into it, and it's kind of interesting that he'll be getting pissed off and you'll put on anything on Spotify and he kind of like, he's like a meerkat, his ears prick up and he's like, who's that what is that? And he's clearly into it. And it's made me think, oh God, you know, I'd like him to, you know, he's called Dylan Cohen, so he's got a good start in terms of going into music, isn't he? So, you know, like I kind of think about it like, oh, what is he going to pursue musically? I'm sure we'll encourage him. And then I remember, I don't think I've ever told you this, Dane, we still find new things to talk about, that when I was 6 years old at primary school, I started piano lessons and I had six. And after the sixth one, I had to decide whether I wanted to carry on. And I said no. And I said, I don't want to do this. And from that moment on, I have zero musical ability, like zero. And I know James have a great ability on the drum kit, you know, and and I've got nothing. I'd love to be a musician. That would be like, I genuinely probably fantasize about it when I'm listening to music. I think a lot of people do when they listen to music, right? You think it'd be great to be this person.
Yeah.
But like, do you know what? I'm actually going to say, to be a drummer, often unsung heroes of music, right, James, the drummers, to be, just to be, you know, to have a, you know, even just being like a Genesis tribute band or something. God, I'm just like,
we have to pretty Howard, fix government's role.
You don't have to be in the tribute band, Howard. Money is not an object. Neither is your stature in society. Just be in Genesis.
Just be in that.
Like,
I'd be in a Phil Collins world tour in 2021. That would be a perfect career for me to have instead of this, which I do like, obviously. But you know,
so hold on a second. If you could do a body swap, you would body swap with LeBron James. But if you could have any career, you would be Phil Collins. I don't understand this.
Phil Collins is drummer.
Well, Phil Collins obviously has his own skills on the drum. I mean, look, I'm a complex guy, James, and you know, there's a good juxtaposition between those. I mean, I think a lot of people respect, obviously, the work of Phil Collins. Dane, yeah, I don't know if we've ever talked about Phil Collins, have we, or not? But
no, big fan. And yeah, Genesis are really good. Jesus Who Knows Me is a great one. And also I can't dance.
Yep.
I thought that was very funny.
Yeah.
And obviously In the Air Tonight is a classic.
I think I'd broaden it and say I don't have to just be in Phil Collins's band. That might be, you know, I don't know if Phil's touring next year, obviously, James.
Sure.
Dane, you know,
I feel like if Phil is smart and if Phil is vital, I can't see why Phil would not be a part of another massive tour. I like to think like 2021 onwards, when we are able to return to a state of the closest to normalcy in terms of live performance we can. Hmm. I think for companies like Ticketmaster and Live Nation, I think it's everyone's interest to make basically to almost turn live venues on a global scale into the equivalent of like the Fringe, James. I like, you know, normally it's like this cupboard can fit a microphone in it. It's a room. Yeah. Like that's how it's going to work.
Yeah.
With like, it's going to work with concerts and live performance. It's going to be like,
oh yeah,
that roof on top of that building is big enough. Looks like a venue for me. And so it would be weird to think that Phil Collins wouldn't enjoy the opportunity to tour now.
Oh yeah.
Although Dane, you were saying, you know, when it gets back to normal, maybe people aren't going to want to hear about stuff that's maybe triggering, reminds them of COVID, stuff like that. I don't think Phil Collins is going to be playing In the Air Tonight.
That is true. That is true. And it goes, Stranger to You and Me.
Another Day in Paradise. Yeah, not so much, Phil, actually, now you mention it.
Then again, if he does tap into the correct conspiracy theorist market, like the foreboding that comes with that amazing song will work excellently. And I can see it maybe having maybe a Christmas number one 2021.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about this the other week when I was listening to the song Easy Lover. And I was thinking, it's a little bit, I'm not sure the Me Too movement will enjoy the song Easy Lover. It's kind of a little bit offensive now, isn't it, really? But
I don't think that's the top of their priority list. Yeah, sure.
Right now.
Good point.
Also, Howard, I guess the rebuttal would be that, you know, with the fluidity of gender, you don't have to preface Easy Lover by saying she. And also, she doesn't necessarily have to mean a cisgender woman either in today's world.
Yeah. Phil, if you're listening, you can still get away with that, we're thinking.
The vocals are way too good for to notice.
Oh, those harmonies.
By the time you're like, what pronoun did he use? Like, we're already on, better forget it. And we're all trying to do that falsetto. So
that's,
Phil will be all right.
That's lovely, Dane. Dane, where do you stand on this? What are you fancy doing?
What do I fancy doing? Do you know, I don't want to limit myself too much now. And this refers back to the earlier question as well, James, because in my short list of body swaps, I was thinking Kanye West, but then I was thinking about magnitude of cultural impact, but then I thought maybe global impact was actually more important given the time frame. And I say that to say this because I feel like Kanye has been inspirational to me, maybe not with his narrative, but so far as a polymath of going from music to fashion design and even design and architecture, I really admire that. And so for me, I would like to see myself maybe moving from doing comedy and performing arts. You know, as you're saying before, like the job you're doing is very similar. It's about, you know, it's very humanist and about finding resolutions for people. And I like that idea. So on my WhatsApp, I refer to myself as an astronaut on an astral plane. And the reason why is because I would like the idea of having a job where I would study dreams, and I'd start use mediums like dreams or suggestion to study human psychology and the human mind. So let's say if somebody had schizophrenia or any kind of personality disorder, it would be able to have the technology to explore that particular character. So almost like a body swap, but in real life. So if someone is dealing with that, it's that like through virtual reality, we are able to kind of recreate that aesthetic and help that person therapeutically by just taking a walk inside of their minds. So that's something that I'd like to do. The other thing I would like
be
to
be a mind
is,
walker. You want to be a mind walker.
Yeah, like as I say, like an astral plane astronaut. So like I'd be able to like connect to people via their dreams and through other images or suggestions they may experience, or whether that's delusions and stuff. And maybe learn to walk them through that and help them to cancel that. So I think that'd be good to have that shared experience.
I think I can imagine some people's minds being quite delightful to walk through. I imagine it's a really...
Some would be, yeah.
I imagine, James, is your mind's a very pleasant park experience.
No.
Really?
I don't think anyone's is.
I think there is a dark side of the moon, Howard.
Oh, sure. But I imagine if you just got James on a good day, it's just like a really nice, you know, a really nice park experience. It's a little bit, you need to have a jacket, but it's a little, you know, it's a bright day. No.
Oh, no. You'd be wading through, like, you know, why are there all these, like, marshes of self doubt?
What's that big dark spot over there? That's an existential crisis. Stay away from that. Rationalization part. Yeah. Well, I feel like that's. I mean, that's a big revelation for people to understand. Howard, is that one of the? Motivators for comedy is being able to be aware of and observing trauma, even not necessarily from yourself, but observing trauma or the pathology of trauma, and I guess existing to provide a alternative, at least artistically. I feel like with comedy, that's part of the duality, is that the more you have an understanding or you're able to make observations regarding sorrow and trauma, the more you the harder you work to create an alternate state compared to that. Like you look at, arguably, for example, Richard Pryor, the guy, one of the best comedians of his generation, whose childhood traumas would be like, you know, it'd be a very difficult opening part of a film for a biopic if they showed it. So that makes sense. So, and the other thing I'd like to do is I have a theory based on no scientific research whatsoever that if we are able to combine the stem cells and 3D printers, we can revolutionize the organ production and prosthesis industry. And so I would like to go into a lot of research in terms of like taking stem cells and stuff and being able to grow and create tissue and organs for, like, you know, I guess people affected by war, people born with degenerative diseases or genetic defects. And I'd like to do a lot more research into that in terms of like how we can improve humanity in that respect.
And man, I feel bad now. I feel bad now because I just wanted to be Phil Collins' drummer.
That's okay. No, but that's cool though. But you know, but even things like being Phil Collins, that's fine though. At the same time, I like the idea, for example, of looking at just human kinesthetics and understanding why some people are good at drumming, and is that because of they have particular fast twitch muscles or synapses that respond better to, or they're able to have a high aptitude in terms of, you know, how they respond to frequencies and vibration. Like, I'd like to study that. I think it's based on a friend of mine told me that the Welsh Sports Council went to their schools in Wales and were able to work out based on your physiology what sports and stuff you would prosper in. And I think I've said before, like, I'm pretty not hot on classic structures of academia, and I would like to kind of create a framework whereby, you know, we dispense with any kind of employment-based or occupational hierarchy. So if you're someone who has an interest in working with anaerobic microbes or sewage, and that's what you're interested in, that's something that is championed with the same kind of gusto that we would someone who's interested in banking or neurology. And so that's encouraged in terms of like how this person really is interested in shit. And if they are interested in literal shit, then we encourage them to learn about it as much as possible. And so working towards creating a whole framework of universal education where everyone contributes to benefiting humanity rather than having a occupational hierarchy and people being salarized accordingly.
Right,
I feel like that's a big problem with us. Our capitalist society is that if we gave, you know, when people in America say stuff like, well, if you don't listen in class, you're going to be pumping gas and solding people's fries. And it's like, what the fuck's wrong with that? I want whoever the best fry salter is in the world, or the best ones in the world, I want them to feel confident and fulfilled enough to maximize that so we get the optimal fry to salt to fry ratio.
Which is very important, obviously.
That is important. Actually, I mean, it's something that genuinely, I think, like, it's why you get so many more food travel shows around America and stuff. It's because there's a pride in the food outlets there, whether it's fast food or fine dining, of like being the best at that specific thing and being better than your local competitors and stuff like that. So you get loads of really amazing places to eat, and that's starting to build now in the UK. It's not as prevalent as it is over there, but like, as someone who does a food podcast and then travels around the country doing gigs, I'm seeing it creeping in more now, and it's good to see.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully those places will survive after all of this mess.
Fingers crossed, eh? Fingers crossed. Yeah. That has been a wonderfully lovely episode to be part of, hasn't it, Dane? What a thoughtful episode.
Absolutely, but I had no doubt. I always knew that we would get a very nice and cerebral episode with Mr. Acosta Jr.
Is it very kind?
It's been a pleasure. Obviously, I had no doubt that this would be a very fun and cerebral episode. James, thank you so much for coming on the podcast again. And thank you for having me on your podcast. Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me on your podcast. And please tell our listeners where they can find more of our voices working adroitly, but as well as where they can find more of your work too.
Yeah, well, Dane was a fantastic guest on my Perfect Sounds podcast, which is on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts. It's me trying to prove that 2016 is the greatest year for music of all time. I send a different guest every week an album from 2016. They come on and we talk about it. With me and Dane have already talked about the Koji Radical album, 23 Winters. And there's an upcoming episode with Dane, a second episode coming out as well, where we talk about, I'll reveal it. I don't care. Because I think people love this album, and we talk about King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard and their album Nonagon Infinity, and that was a pleasure to chat to Dane about that. I'm really looking forward to that coming
and
out.
And a very good album, and a very amazing concept. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, we got deep into it, especially the concept. Also, yeah, me and Ed Gamble do Off Menu as well, where we talk about food. And the most exciting thing that I've got coming up is on the 17th of December, my last tour show, Cold Lasagna Hate Myself 1999, which I filmed last December, will be live streamed. It'll be streamed, but as live.
Yeah.
On Dice, which is a streaming platform, a live streaming platform. And this 2-hour-long show that I recorded in December with a full room will go out. And I'm so proud of it. I've never been so proud of anything that I've done, if I'm honest. And I'm really looking forward to that being live streamed. You can go to Dice FM and get tickets for that.
Let me tell you, listeners, if you like James's work, that is his, you know, Sergeant Pepper's or the whatever your favorite band's equivalent, you know, is an absolute wonderful piece of work.
Thanks, man. Very good.
So for those of you who are wanting to check out the Acosta opus that is called Lasagna I Hate Myself, then check that out on Dice. And also, guys, do not ignore the entire James Acosta anthology currently available on Netflix as well. As I say, you will not find a comic like him, which is why he has had so many accommodations, and we admire him very much on this podcast. So thank you so much, James.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
We shall see you again someday in person. Who knows?
We'll see. I might just carry on living like this, but yeah.
Well, whatever you choose, as long as you're happy, James, I will be happy. So yeah, enjoy and have a wonderful day. And hope to hear from you soon, lockdown or otherwise.
You too. Thanks, guys. Don't stop asking questions.
Never will. Thank you very much, James.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at danebaptweets or Instagram at danesnaptiste. Our guest was James Acosta. You can follow James on Twitter at jamesacosta. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at thehowardcohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Audio Culture. You can follow Audio Culture on Instagram at @weareaudioculture. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @dbqepodcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.